This is entrepreneur and author John McLaughlin thanking you for listening to another amazing episode of The Road to Rediscovery. It's time to sit back, relax, and listen as your host, Aubrey Johnson, safely navigates us through life's challenges and guides us on a rewarding path of self-discovery.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. I'm excited to share that the Road to Rediscovery Stand store is now officially open. That's right, inspired by this podcast and insights from our many, many amazing guests, we have all sorts of resources targeting your personal growth, from free e-guides to e-books, and also, of course, the full-blown Rediscovery Roadmap digital course. Get on the road to overcoming adversities and realizing your true potential by visiting us at stan.store/road to rediscovery. That's stan.store/road2rediscovery.com. And we are always, always so grateful for your listenership. All right, my special guest is an author and certified swim teacher who has taught scores of adults how to swim with confidence, and more so, applying the mental swimming principles to balancing family and personal growth, as well as pursuing your dreams. Her community, Calm Within Adult Swim, has transformed the lives of many adults to give them a new lease on life. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Corey Micah to the show. Corey, it's so great to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, absolutely. We are equally excited to have you. Can't wait to unpack your insights and see how all this comes together. If you can share with us, start us off by sharing with us the part of your journey that inspired you to teach swimming and help others break free from societal expectations and those types of things.
Sure. So swimming has always been a love and a passion of mine. I have many young child stories, family stories of Corey going into the water, right? That kind of thing. So it's always around. First adult I ever offered to teach to swim was when I was 5 years old. We're on a houseboat, and my aunt, I found out, couldn't swim, which, of course, to my five-year-old brain's like, what?
So yeah.
I'll teach you, Auntie. But my real inspiration for focusing on adult overcoming fear, adult beginning, and understanding the mindset that needs to go into learning something that, frankly, people do drown, right? So there is a legitimate reason for people to have fear. And if you haven't learned as an adult, right, you have those stories that you take with you. If you had a bad experience yourself, or you just have an understanding of like, I should have a little caution around this. This is not the same as learning to play pickleball, you know? But it really got the inspiration for my students. I can remember my first adult student when I was like 15 or 16 years old, working at the summer pool. And she was so old. And now I look back, I'm like, I don't know, she could have been 60. At any rate, she told me her story of wanting to learn to swim, because when she was a kid, her brothers were allowed to learn to swim, and she wasn't, because she was a girl. And I thought, what is that about? That didn't make any sense. But growing up in a different time than I did, and even at that, when I think she grew up at a different time, but even from my time of knowing her, like there was no girls water polo when I went to high school. And so that was still a thing. And that still is generationally. There are things that we are not allowed to do for various reasons. And so, but that really stuck to me and stuck with me. And her desire to be able to do this thing. And she had a lot of intrepidation and worry and concern. And it was, I taught her how to do the physical steps, but I could tell I was missing something. You know, the way I was teaching kids was not how it was going to work for an adult. And I empathetically tried my best. But it certainly set me on that road to what do I need to do here to be and do something differently when working with an adult?
I see. Yeah. I mean, I guess the difference in mindset, right? And the difference in years experience, whereas a child may have less than 5 years experience and not much experience of the outside world versus an adult who's had some exposure to consequences, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, that's tremendous. Okay. And that makes sense. I mean, taking a different approach in teaching adults versus how a child is taught. Now, having that previous experience as an adult, as adults get older and they have experiences where they experience consequences, which makes them a little more wary of getting into the pool or doing something like that. I guess there's a healthy amount of that, right? But there's also a healthy amount of, I don't want to say reckless abandon, but what the child doesn't know, right? Which gives them that sense of maybe a small sense of invincibility. You know, they'll throw caution to the wind because they haven't experienced, you know, a traumatic event. Let's hope not, right? Mm-hmm. Is there a balance between the two that that you have to kind of coach and guide adults to have?
For sure. This is why we say learning to swim as an mm-hmm. adult and, you know, many, many things that you learn as an adult. Mm-hmm. It's like 80% mental to 20% physical. And most mm-hmm. of the time when we go out, we're thinking about the physical steps. These are all the action things that I need to do.
Yes.
But when you're an adult learning, it is about understanding, okay, what is the part that I do need to play? Let's just call it the parent role of protecting and crafting a safe space and knowing what the boundaries and the limitations are mm-hmm. and using, as you said, the fear in a healthy way, right? In a way, you know, not in a way that says, what am I going to do when I'm in the middle of the ocean and you're sitting next to a 4-foot pool, right?
Yeah.
We got to know how to come into the real and present time. Mm-hmm. So we want to give space and honor to that part of our brain and our way of being so that the child part of ourself mm-hmm. and can have a safe place to explore. Not necessarily reckless abandon, but to be able to move with curiosity and discovery, and which is different than that parent than being evaluative and judgmental, right?
Yes.
So there's another layer of the of that experience, how we allow ourselves to be in that playful place of discovery. Mm-hmm. But as an adult, we get to hold both of those things. And so that is really a big thing that we do differently when we work with adults than children, because children's brain, they don't have that part. Their frontal lobe is still developing, that impulse control, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's very normal so that they can be in more discovery mode. So we get to learn how to balance and hold both of those roles for ourselves.
That makes sense. That makes a tremendous amount of sense. And like you said, that frontal lobe still developing for the child, which pretty much leads me to my next question, because in my mind, at least, you know, learning how to swim as a child, I was a late child. I was 12. But the child, as they are being taught how to swim, you know, they're focused on learning how to swim, at the time they're being taught, I guess that's their end game. They want to swim. They want to learn how to swim. And, you know, as adults, we want to get to that point, hopefully, where we are, what is it called? Unconsciously competent. Where, you know, where we don't know we're doing it, but it's so natural to us that we're competent and, you know, and we do it almost second nature, right? So we want to get to that point when it comes to being taught how to swim. Now let's talk about on the other side of that, okay? We learned and now we know. The child does it with the goal of getting to swim. From an adult standpoint, is there any further logic or any further reasoning that that type of empowerment is discovered by them? They're like, well, if I learned how to do this at my age, imagine the possibilities. Is there that type of thinking or line of thought that follows that?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, we get people who come in and they start taking the classes, and when they learn how to learn and how to learn with this love and self-care and to take care of the mental steps with the physical steps, yeah, then we hear things like, changed that job, ended that relationship, bravely went out on that vacation, right?
Yes.
Or it comes the other way too, that we have people who have had an experience like that. They, I had one guy, he was a scientist actually at the VA, and he made a discovery breakthrough, and that like boosted his self-confidence in this way that he's like, well, if I can do this, like what else could I do? And then he decided, well, swimming is something I never thought I could do. That's why he ended up coming to learn to swim. And he never thought he would go to Hawaii. Well, then he went to Hawaii on a science conference and swam, right? Like, so put it all together. Wow. Yeah, it's so neat. I want to back into something else that you just said, if you don't mind for a moment.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, that piece where you said that kids, like they want to learn to swim and adults want unconscious competency. I would say, you know, maybe at 12 years old, those kids might be looking at, I do want to learn to swim because I want to be able to pass the swim test and be with my friends and, you know, do something like, and they can think in those ways. But you're under eight. They don't care if they learn to swim. They just want to have a good time.
Yeah, I right? see.
Uh-huh. They just want to play. They just like the water's just this like interesting and fascinating environment. They just want to like go down and have tea parties on the bottom. And they want to like pretend that they're Nemo. And they just, and this is how they developed an unconscious competency around the water. This is where we see why people say it's so easy for kids to learn, because they don't care if they learn. They care if they're having a good time. And that's one of the things that we bring in for our adults. They are focused on like, I have to do this thing so I can be safe, so I can go on a kayak, right? And it limits their experience, and it limits that unconscious competency because they're so focused on a destination and they lose where they're at right now and the joy and fun and connection and exploration of their body that comes when you put the whole package together.
I got it. Okay. I understand. And thank you for that clarification, because that's how children are. You know, they just want to have fun. And it seems like that unconscious competency just comes natural when you're not so focused on it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the way we build habits. That's, and that's why it's unconscious, because it's just part of your being.
100%. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about something that came to my mind when I was learning how to swim at 12 years ago. And this was something that was the adult who taught me how to swim basically told me. My instructor, he talked about the importance of when you're in the water being loose and relaxed and not tense. And he would always say, and I quote, tense people sink. Is part of what you teach some semblance to that, or is there some semblance to that as it may apply to other facets of life?
Yeah, for sure. So that tension, we're tense. If you're in the water and you're tense, there's a reason. And the reason usually is about a belief. It's about a fear or a belief. So it could even be one of the biggest beliefs, misbeliefs that I see is you're supposed to be flat to the and parallel to the surface of the water, which if you're making your body flat, it by definition, you have tension to do that. And so you're executing a belief that might not actually be true in the particular situation. And in terms of swimming, it's true that you don't want to be over tense. You want to know what happens if you're totally at ease. Your body will droop. Your feet will go down. It doesn't mean that you are sinking. There's a difference.
Understood. No, yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, keep going.
Oh, but you were saying, you know, how does that apply in other areas of your life, right? We do it all the time. We have these limiting beliefs or things, the way we think something should be, and we start acting on it instead of being in a place of discovery, right? Of, I'd like to just be at ease in the water. What am I willing to go in a place? Is there a safe place for me to go to just be at ease and find out what happens and be open that it might be different than what my belief is about it? That's something we need in everyday life too.
Yeah, that's true. And again, on the other side of that, right, where they have that aha moment or they finally discover and realize, hey, my body's not flat. I'm not tense. My legs are going down. My arms are going down, but I'm not sinking, you know, and then they realize that. Then I guess it's this epiphany of, well, it's not as bad as I thought. Yeah. Right. And I guess there's some type of breakthrough like that would have to happen for that discovery to then, like in a cycle, provides empowerment and confidence to where not being tense becomes more of a habit. It's more relaxed. They're not trying not to be tense. They're just not tense.
Right. Yes. There's such a difference between trying not to be tense and you're just not.
Just not. Right.
You're just not. Well, and a big piece of it is this, like, the idea that I want to control the future, or I don't know what's on the other side of, in this case, letting go of tension, right? It's this fear of the unknown. And so this is something in our life. So we end up walking around life trying to make everything just so, because the assumption is if we let go of it, it might be something bad, but we don't actually know if that's true.
Absolutely. We don't know if that's true. And the whole ironic part is there's only one way to find out. We have to let go. We have to see, right? No one has that crystal ball. So if you want to find out, you have to let go. And I'm sure in some people's eyes that could be daunting, I guess.
Well, and that's why I always say, you know, it's not like you go from 100% of tension to zero. That's an unfair expectation of yourself.
Yes.
In the pool or anywhere else. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, our job, back to that earlier conversation of being your adult and the adult and child part.
Yeah.
The adult part has to set yourself up in a situation, in a context where you cognitively and in your body know it's safe enough to let go a little bit. You don't have to let go of all of it, but just let go of a little bit, 1 or 2% of it. Mm-hmm. And then you get that feedback, like you talked about a loop. You get a feedback of like, oh, okay, this is what happened when I let go 1%.
Yes, yes.
The world wouldn't end, right?
Yes. Okay.
Now I can be invited to let go a little more and a little more and a little more. And it's in this kind, loving ourself to let that process happen and not be in a rush to go from zero or, you know, 100% tension to zero. Just letting it unfold. It's okay to let it unfold as you keep setting yourself up in a safe situation where it is safe to let go.
Got it. Over time, incrementally, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to go from 100 to zero. No, that definitely makes sense. And that's more reasonable, you know? I would hate to think that someone would set themselves up with unreasonable expectations of reducing down to zero so quickly, because, you know, knowing that's not going to happen, obviously they would be disenchanted and probably wouldn't try anymore. And so, I'm so glad, Corey, that you reemphasized the importance of it being okay for us to, you know, have that tension reduce incrementally, you know, baby steps, piece by piece, bit by bit, as we go on. But the important piece is that we continue to try and continue to move in that direction. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that you have, you know, it's the road to rediscovery, right? I use a roadmap as an illustration all the time that, you know, if you want to go, I'm in Washington, you're in Texas, right? We want to, I want to go see you. Society tells us I need to get on a plane and get over there. And that is where I need to go. But if I want to be practicing different things, like, you know, enjoying my life, taking a road, right, and going one step at a time and going down, I'm trying to think of what the highways are. I'm like, there isn't a diagonal highway between us. Like, I have to
figure it
out. You know, there's actually probably quite a few. I've driven from Washington to Texas, and there's quite a few different ways to get there, right? And so, navigating along those ways. And I can have an amazing time. I had a whole year driving around the U.S.
Oh, my.
There's amazing, like, sights to see on the way. Wow. And, you know, that's what's really, to me, what makes a really full and rich life. Sometimes then you do fast forward and take the plane, but not when you're on a learning path, right? When you're on a learning path, take the road.
That is so graciously and eloquently put there, Corey. And I truly mean that because, you know, I associate our lives, as a journey. And so for you to say and to articulate it, being on a learning path, you know, you want to take your time. You want to see the variance of textures and environments and grades and just different terrains, right? Mm-hmm. The whole topography of it all changes as you go on this journey, and it's all representative of times in our lives. So that just makes it come full circle, and it helps you appreciate, you know, where we've come to be, who we are today, all the more, I feel, you know, and it sounds like that the great work that you're doing in helping others in realizing their potential, realizing that it's something they can do and how it applies to the confidence in other facets of their life, that helps them understand and appreciate where they've come to be today as well, it seems like. So I definitely have to commend you for your work. And one of the challenges I would think you would have, if you can just give us some insight on this, is those societal norms or expectations, right? We talk about traditional paths and non-traditional paths and you know, to me, in my mind, traditional and non-traditional, I mean, they're just words. I mean, it's the traditional and non-traditional is defined in my mind as what is driven by society. Society says this is traditional. Society says this is non-traditional. But who's society to say when everyone's capable? And if everyone is capable, then they're just words. I want to know, and the listeners would love to hear your insight, when it comes to societal norms and expectations having such a strong hold on people, right? And maybe it's more Generation X and back, because, you know, younger generations are starting to push the envelope in other areas. I'm just guessing there. But is there some sort of mindset shift that's needed for one to pursue something that may be non-traditional or contrary to societal expectations? Or in your experience, has that person already passed that mind shift because they're wanting to pursue that non-traditional path in the first place?
Well, as you were saying that, what comes to mind is this story that I tell around the first swimmers, right?
Yeah.
At some point, there was the first swimmer. And I kind of have this vision of, like, back in cave times or something, that people were by the water, washing their clothes or drinking the water, playing around in the water. And the kids and whatnot are in there, like, swimming around and having a good time like they do. And there was one kid that said, "Hey, who do you think could get to that rock the first?" Right. And so a bunch of them were like, "Yeah," and they all, like, took off and swam and to that rock over there. And one person got there first. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else looked at that person and said, "Well, they know something. That is good." Maybe using the word that you used, "That's traditional. That's the best." Mm. And then people started copying that person.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like everybody else who got there wasn't swimming. They were all swimming too.
Mm-hmm.
And their swimming was good. It got them there, right? It was all good. But we made this judgment evaluation there of that. And we started copying that one person, and judging ourselves against that one person. You know, the other person who got there last, we oftentimes do a race in our class. And I said, "Okay, we're all going to line up. We're going to race across the pool. And whoever gets there last is the winner."
Oh, really? I like that.
More progress, but it's like this test of how slow can you go? How like discovery can you be? And they find out of moving and enjoying and engaging with the water in a different way.
Yes.
And so it is all good. It's when we decide that one's better than the other, we need all those differences, right? The person who's going through the water slowly, like, they can be out there for hours and hours and hours, you know?
Yeah.
And versus the person who expends all their energy and gets there, right? And now
that's right.
They need more food because they're hyper all over the place. It's just chill and, I don't know, caught the fish along the way or something, right? There's a role and a place for everyone. And we need that. We need our own individual way of being. So swimming is about discovering how your perfect body and the water interact, not somebody else's body.
Right.
Not what you think it should be, but your own equation there.
Wow. You know, whoever's the last win, that type of reverse race there is, to me, that's mind blowing. And it's so it's innovative. I mean, because the result is, as you said, people are learning to be one with the water and connect with the water. And they're more focused on that than quickly getting to the finish line. When you make a slight change to the rule like that, that is brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. I love that because it reinforces what you're teaching in connecting with the water and what truly swimming is, connecting your body with the water, not someone else's. We don't want this comparative thinking saying this person's better than me, this person has better form, this person is shorter, they're taller. We're all different, right? And we all can do it in such a way to where we can still succeed. Thank you for sharing that, Corey. That's tremendous. And it makes a lot of sense. And that is a huge arsenal, or a huge, weapon in your arsenal in how you teach, you know, the bravery of being non-traditional and going, you know, going opposite of expectations or not so much in compliance of expectations. You know, your compliance is what's good for you. And thank you for sharing that for sure. All right. So what I would like to ask next of you is, can we talk about your community, Calm Within Adult Swim? How did the community come about? And just give us a little background on you know, just some of the topics that that go on in that community.
Yeah, so many of the things that we've touched upon are in terms of this idea of what does it mean to swim? What are my expectations? And why am I here? Like, what do I really want to get out of it? And opening people's mindsets to different ideas. Mm-hmm. It's about inspiring us, right? Going to beautiful places and seeing interesting things and growing. And really, we share and connect and talk a lot about foundational work, you know, mental foundations that we need in everyday life. And right. then, you know, also we're talking about, we apply it with the swimming as well. Then what are those foundational things you need in swimming?
Yes.
And we tend to, as adults, think about big, big steps, and we miss really spending time in foundational work. So a lot of our conversation is about that physical and mental foundational work that we need to be successful in an adult life, in a life well lived.
Oh, for sure. Those are the building blocks, right? I mean, that foundation is critically important and sets the tone for the direction we all move in. And foundational type of topics sounds like that some of that central focus within the community.
Right. Yeah. The foundational things of, you know, how do I speak to myself? Yes. How do I show up to a learning environment? How do I help myself continue on and not, you know, sabotage what I'm doing? Those kind of foundational, I, you know, call that like that's the mental fitness. We need a certain amount of mental fitness and practice in our life to be able to go out and extend into different physical arenas, be it work or family or learning, you know, a activity or a hobby.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. I love the mental fitness too, because when you're dealing and working with people on that mental fitness, that's the, to me, does that tap into the 80% mental or 80% psychological part of swimming, and 20% physical? It taps into that 80%. Is that right? With the mental fitness?
It does. Yes. That mental fitness is in there. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we have ways that we sabotage what we're doing, and it starts with that mental piece, right? Our judgment, like that's our biggest saboteur, that we judge ourselves, we judge others, we judge circumstances. Is understanding a mental fitness of how we take that judgment, we don't use it like putting your hand on a hot stove and resting it there, right? We do have an adult piece to like put your hand on a hot stove and like, ooh, that's not good. But we want to be able to take our hand off of it, not continue to burn ourselves. But most of the time, we stay in this judgmental place, right, of ourselves or others or circumstances. It just leaves us feeling bad and doesn't tap into our empowerment side of ourselves. So that's one of these key foundational mental fitness that we need. Yes, that goes into then if we want to apply it to learning to swim, right? If I'm just judging myself and judging the circumstance all over the place, just leaves me frozen and feeling bad.
Yeah, Yeah. No, it does. It doesn't serve well at all, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I want to have judgment to not just jump into the deep end.
Yeah.
But
right. Within reason, right? We want to discern.
Yes.
But not to self-sabotage.
Right. But not to have judgment of something's wrong with you. You should be able to just jump in the deep end, right? That critical judgment piece. That's not useful.
Understood. So, Corey, how can the listeners follow you, connect with you, learn more about your community, and learn more about the great work that you're doing to help people?
Yeah. So on social media, we're Calm Within Adult Swim. So that's our YouTube page and Facebook, Instagram, that sort of thing. So Calm Within Adult Swim. And then to reach us directly, it's adultswimlesson.com. So one swim lesson, adultswimlesson.com. We have our retreats and online learning and where you can dive into that mental fitness if you want to.
Fantastic. All right. We are going to have those web addresses and links all available in the episode show notes so the listeners can click those links, connect with you, learn more about your work while listening to this wonderful conversation. Corey Micah, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for just unpacking and sharing your insights with the listeners in how learning how to swim can build confidence and give you that empowerment, not only to do other things, but to do other things that are non-traditional, that that aren't so much a societal expectation, but of your own personal expectation of your abilities. Corey, thank you for coming on the show. I hope you can come back soon, real soon in the future.
Thank you so much. This was great. I love the road discovery. I think that's what makes a beautiful and amazing life. My desire for everyone.
Oh, thank you so much. And I equally agree. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And look, you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, you're never alone. And hope is always around the corner. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, someone you love, who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. You know, when it all comes down to it, we're all just roadies on this journey of life. But it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Roads Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.